Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffat, the host of the Raw Dog Food Truth, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. If you'd like to know more about the raw diet, go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com. Well, my co-host today is the fabulous, wonderful, and highly agitated today, Dr. Judy Jasek. That's J-A-S-E-K. You can find her at drjudyholisticvet.com. But today we are talking about something that is near and dear to her heart because, as you know, Dr. Jasek is a cancer specialist treating lots of cancer patients. Why? Because we see so many cancer dogs right now. We've seen this over the years. But the other thing, Dr. Jasek, is that we're seeing some crazy advice coming out of the veterinary community in regards to chemo. What do you think about chemo and treating cancer pets?
Well, I think, you know, I think chemotherapy in general, what I see in cancer pets is it's not effective enough to warrant the potential side effects. So I see pets get really sick on chemo, vomiting, diarrhea, they get really lethargic. They quit eating, so then we can't support them nutritionally. You know, we obviously talk about nutrition all the time and the importance. Well, the pets quit eating, so we can't support them nutritionally. And if they do eat, they're throwing it up. And then they have to continually be going back in for blood work to check their white blood cell counts. But in the big thing is in the long run, I just don't see long-term effects. You might get very short-term effects in cancer patients where you might see a tumor shrink, or if it's like lymphoma, you'll see the lymph nodes get a little smaller, but it always comes back. It's a temporary remission. And the statistics that come out, I think this is a real important question for people to ask if they're considering chemotherapy on their pet, is the statistics that come out are based on the short-term success. Like they'll say, well, we have, 80% success. Okay, for how long? Because if we get a 3-month remission and then this, it blows up and then the pet dies month 4, that's not success in my book, especially because the pet has suffered this whole time. It's cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And I see way better results treating pets holistically, supporting the natural healing ability of the body. And some, it's not that, they do sometimes still pass away from the cancer, but we are able to preserve their body, their quality of life, and usually for a lot longer than they can do with the chemo. And the things that are disturbing me and why I'm so riled up this morning is I was just communicating with a client that's going through this now with her dog. This wasn't even cancer. This was an autoimmune disease that this dog had, which it's when we have an autoimmune disease, and that might be a whole topic for another podcast, but we do sometimes need to intervene with something to stop this process because the immune system is attacking part of the body and we have to slow that down. So this little dog had an autoimmune condition of its spine, was actually showing some signs of paralysis. So we need to get that under control. But this dog was recommended, was put on prednisone, which I've used for years for autoimmune disease. I think it can be very effective when used appropriately. And then they're weaned off before we have any long-term side effects. But this dog was also started on a drug I never even heard of. And they were supposed to go back in for injection every 3 weeks. This was a chemotherapy type drug, very potent immunosuppressive drug. And they're supposed to go back in every 3 weeks to this medication. Well, this little dog, the next day got so sick, was vomiting and vomiting and vomiting. And she ended up taking the dog back into the ER. And I'm waiting for, an update this morning to see how things are going. Hopefully it's stable and doing well. But what really disturbs me is that people are being told, and this is what I really want to get out there through my little rant, is that people are being told that these drugs are safe and that dogs don't react the same way people do. I've heard this from multiple clients now. So I know this is the popular propaganda around chemotherapy in pets, is that, oh, it's safe. You know, people have these side effects, but dogs don't. And I see patients all the time where dogs have literally nearly died. They end up back hospitalized for days just treating the side effects of the chemotherapy. And yet people are being told, oh no, that's safe. And like, you know, this little dog that I was just referring to went back in last night and they're told, oh, it's the prednisone. You know, it's not, can't be this harsh chemotherapy drug that's causing this dog to vomit. It's the prednisone, which I don't buy for a second. And so what's really disturbing is there, these harsh drugs are being used. People are not being informed of the potential side effects, you know, what can happen to their pet. They're spending so much money. I mean, you know, this will be thousands more dollars for this pet parent, which I'm sure she's willing to do to take care of her pet, but thousands of dollars spent needlessly if this pet had not been put on these, you know, super harsh medications. And what I know happens, you know, how this industry works is these drugs come over from human medicine. So when pharmaceutical companies come out with a new drug, it's usually patented. And so that means that, you know, that's unique to that company and nobody else can sell it. And they charge astronomical prices that on the human side, like our insurance pays for. That's why our insurance bills are so high, because these companies are putting these astronomical price tags on these medications. And then the medications, the patent will run out. It's for a certain amount of time. And then there's a generic form. And then the price drops exponentially. And then they come over to the veterinary side because they're now affordable for people to use on their pets. But these drugs aren't tested on pets. I mean, I would challenge anybody that goes in to an oncologist or any time a chemotherapy type drug is recommended, ask if they've been tested for safety on pets. And I would bet anything that they're not, and that your pets are just, they're being used as guinea pigs. Like, well, we'll use this on the human side. Let's try it on the pets and see what happens. So be so careful. These are powerful drugs. These are drugs that can kill your pet, literally.
So what are you hearing the vets say to the pet parents that is leading the pet parents to believe that this would be a great option for them?
Oh, well, that if they don't do it, like in the case of cancer, if they don't do it, their pet will be dead in a month. I mean, it's all very doom and gloom. Like pretty much this is their only option, or take the pet home to die. You do this and, you know, you might have 3 months, or you take your pet home and it'll be dead in 3 or 4 weeks. And it's not true. I mean, I treat these pets for months and months and months sometimes. So they're being told that there's no other options. And again, that this can be done safely.
You know, years ago, my lab that we had rescued, so we don't know his life that he had when we got him. He was at least 5, maybe 6. But he developed lymphoma at the age of 13. So this was very disturbing, one, because we were feeding him a raw diet, but again, and we weren't doing vaccines. But again, we don't know his history. Okay. So I think that's one thing that people say, well, if I can't totally ensure that my dog's not going to get cancer, then I'm not going to do the raw diet. And I say, well, he probably would have got cancer a lot faster, a lot earlier in his life. But I will say this,
exactly,
that once we found out that that's what he had, we opted not to do the chemo. And we said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do CBD with a certain level of THC in it, not that makes the dog high, but I think that there are some studies or even some opinions that would say that when you use the whole plant with a little bit of the THC, which the THC is the mind-altering part, okay? That's the part that gets you high. But it was a very low dose in this particular CBD oil that we decided that we were going to use. I think the interesting part of this was that the traditional vet at that time that saw him said, you know, he's probably got, you know, weeks to maybe a couple of months to live if you don't do the chemo, right? If you don't do any harsh intervention. We did nothing except the holistic route, and he lived a year. And he lived a year where up until the very end, and they gave us the prednisone as well. We didn't even use that until the very, very end. So I totally stand behind what you're saying because I've experienced it. I've been through it myself.
Yeah. You know, I had a case just earlier this week of a 13-year-old Rottweiler, always fed raw, and had been diagnosed with a malignant melanoma in its mouth. And this is a very tuned in pet parent. I mean, very, very holistic. She feeds raw to all her dogs. She does everything very naturally, doesn't over vaccinate. And so I asked her, I said, so where do you think, you know, this came from? And she says, I know where it came from. She says, I do tracking work with this dog. And he's 13. They're not doing it anymore, but they would go to a sod farm where there was space and they would, you know, use the space at this sod farm. And she says, I know they were spraying all kinds of chemicals there. And he did that for years. However, it's like you were saying about your dog, Dee Dee, this dog, it was a 13-year-old Rottweiler. I mean, he'd gone beyond the average life expectancy of the breed already. And yeah, he ended up with this little tumor, but I have very little doubt that we'll be able to support this dog and he'll probably, you know, his life will end from some other age-related incident and not the cancer. So it's not that they can't get it, but had this dog been kibble fed out there on, you know, tracking on the sod farm, he probably would have died of cancer when he was 5. As a matter of fact, she told me that this dog had in his litter that I think just about every individual that she knew of from this dog's litter had passed away much younger, like 5, 6, 7 years old from cancer. So this dog, being raw fed, had made it to 13, already beyond the, you know, life expectancy of the breed. So yeah, you can't guarantee that it's never going to happen, but you're going to have your dog for a lot longer and they're going to be a lot healthier.
So let me ask you, what would a pet parent see if they put their dogs on chemo? What kind of life will the dog have if they go through rounds of chemo?
Well, definitely intestinal distress. So vomiting, diarrhea, same things you hear about in people. Really lethargic. They don't feel good. I see these dogs after, you know, they've gotten through the worst of their chemo side effects and they come in and you just look in their eyes and they're just so depleted. They're just so wiped out. Cause it's literally poison. You know, you're wiping out their immune system. These are drugs that are designed to kill the cancer cells. Well, you're putting it in their body. It's killing, you know, lots of healthy cells as well. If it's oral, because there are some oral chemotherapy drugs, you're totally destroying the normal microbiome, which we've talked about a lot, which causes a lot of the intestinal distress and just, you know, lethargic. I mean, sick to the point where pet parents, they scoop their pets up and run them into the ER. They know there's something really seriously wrong with them.
So if a dog has cancer, and there's so many types of cancer, would you say that there are any cancers that would benefit from chemo at all?
Not in my experience. And I see a lot of cancer patients. I have I used to believe for a while that there's been a couple of lymphoma cases over the years that I would see go into remission on chemo for a more lengthy period of time, but now they are, it's like they're using stronger and stronger drugs, it seems, because it just seems like all the pets that I see that start chemo just get really sick. I actually have a current patient that a lymphoma diagnosis started this CHOP protocol. CHOP is an acronym for it's, and I don't know the names of the drugs because I don't keep up on it enough, but it's four different drugs. They go through this process with these four different drugs. And this dog got to like the second treatment and was hospitalized for 3 days, got so sick. And now I'm treating the dog. We're doing ozone. We got the dog on a better diet. And this dog just thriving, just comes bouncing in here, you know, bright eyed, all kinds of stories to tell, you know. Where the first time I saw this dog, it was like I said, you can just see in their eyes, they're so depleted. They're just so wiped out because they're literally being poisoned.
Yeah, I think that that's something that we tend to forget, whether that is flea and tick, whether that is some level of vaccines, whether that is chemo, you have to put poison in the body. And some dogs are not going to bounce back from that. A lot of them, as you see, are not going to bounce back for that. So in your mind, what is the question? Because once a pet parent hears that their pets have cancer, especially the ones that have the young dogs, they want to do everything they can to make this go away, right? To get them past it. So there's a level of fear. And when we have fear, we don't think straight. But what would you say the top questions are that a pet parent wants to ask themselves before they go down the road of possibly doing a chemo treatment? We don't want them to do that, but a lot of people, you know, are going to say, that's the standard protocol. That's what I'm going to do. What are the questions that pet parents need to ask themselves?
I would say, first of all, what do they want to see in their pet? Like what results are they looking for? I mean, obviously we want the cancer to go away, but as the pet goes through this treatment, what is most important to them? Like, are they, you know, are they willing to sacrifice their pet's health and well-being for several months and have a sick pet getting them through a chemo treatment? Or would they rather see their pet have a better quality of life for, you know, as long as possible, which is my approach. I'm all about the pet's quality of life. That's, to me, that's just the most important thing. And then, you know, and I think it's important too, that they, you know, they question their veterinarian, they ask about safety and Google these drugs. You can find, you know, find out which drugs they're using and question your veterinarian, go online and ask yourself, are these drugs safe? Is this safe for my pet? What are the potential side effects? And I can guarantee you, you go read those, it'll scare the bejesus out of you. And you're not going to be told that from your oncologist or this other little dog I'm just now working with, the neurologist. They're not saying, well, these are all the potential side effects. Go Google, go just look these drugs up, even look them up on the human side. Because like I said, these all come over from the human side. And so you can read all of the potential side effects, and I can guarantee you they're the same. I mean, the potential side effects are the same in pets as they are in people. I think this whole thing, oh, well, they're safe in dogs. You know, dogs just handle it better than people. Like that's, I have no idea where that comes from, unless it's that the people whose dogs get sick just never go back into the oncologist. The oncologist never sees them, but I sure do. I mean, I see them all the time.
So they want to ask about the safety of the medications. They also want to ask, you know, what is the efficacy rate, right? So, I mean, is it short term, long term? What are we talking about? You know, what dogs have you seen that have really recovered? What's the percentage of dogs? Because I think this is something that when people call me and they're talking to their, or they say, should I go to the vet? And I said, well, I can't tell you whether you should go to the vet. That's not my place. But I will ask you, what are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to achieve? And what is the vet saying that they can do? I was talking to somebody the other day. They were going to try to find out if, and maybe it's the same person, if their dog had a brain tumor. And I said, well, okay, if your dog does have a brain tumor, then what? You know, what are you hoping to gain from treatment? And will that treatment actually get you there? And is there evidence to back that up, right? To say that we can actually do something. So I think that that's a very difficult time for pet parents, you know, like it was for us. But we just didn't, we knew that chemo would take, you know, his life, and it wouldn't be a good life. And so I would say our lab, and I will say this, Dr. Judy, this was something that was so amazing to us. So lymphoma, the reason that we even noticed that he had this, because dogs are so stoic, right? They don't show the pain they're in until they're in, you know, really dire straits. But his face was distorted. We came home from a speaking engagement. I'd been gone for several days on the road. And his face, I said, has he been bitten by a bug or something? And what happened was his lymph nodes around the neck had swollen up to the point that his face was very distorted. But it was amazing, once we started him on the CBD oil, those shrank immediately. And I said, are we just imagining this because we want these to shrink? Or is this really happening? And the vet at the time said, look, I have no experience with CBD oil. I have no, you know, knowledge of its efficacy, but whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. And yeah, it was amazing. You know, it was really amazing that that happened. Do you see that in using some CBD oil? I mean, look, people say CBD oil is a miracle oil. We don't really know if it is or not. We do know that we all have cannabinoids, and so do dogs that respond well to that. But have you seen that type of response in some of your cancer patients?
Yeah, well, I start all my cancer patients on CBD. It's always part of the protocol, or I recommend it. It's pretty rare that somebody won't start their pet on it. And I really do believe that's part. I mean, I do multiple things. So it's like, okay, which is having which effect? I mean, a lot of the patients I see are not on raw already. So we're doing the diet change, and, you know, I add in, you know, other support like ozone and mistletoe and these different things. But I am a big believer in CBD. I do diet. And then the second thing I always recommend is CBD, because it's so safe, and it has proven, you know, anti-cancer effects. I mean, it's good for so many things in the body, especially because, you know, a lot of the pets I do see are older. So it helps with those aches and pains. And it has, I mean, the research is showing it has proven anti-cancer effects. It can shrink tumors directly. So, and every pet is going to respond differently, but there's absolutely no reason not to use it. There's only an upside to using CBD. And, you know, whether or not you use the, you know, the products with a little bit of THC in them, you know, that discussion goes back and forth. I think the most important thing is that it's a good quality product. So it's grown clean. It's grown organically. It's processed without using chemicals such as butane. There's some processing techniques that actually use butane, which obviously you don't want those residues in your product. That it's then in a carrier oil that is stable. I have seen some that, you know, like are in fish oil, which, you know, I worry about fish oil and stability. So I think those things are most important. And if you know it's a really good quality product, then you can go either way. I usually recommend the CBD just because I know a couple of products that are super clean. And I think it's hard to sometimes find those products with the THC that are really clean. I mean, I'm always on the lookout for them, but you have to rely on the companies to be ethical and to produce clean products because there's no regulation. So you have to be sure to ask those questions and just to make sure that it's a good quality, clean product. Then you can go either way. I mean, obviously you don't want your dog stoned, but, you know, if it has a little bit of THC in it and it's a good product and, you know, you have access to it, then yeah, go ahead and give it a try.
Okay. I want to ask you one more question on this series, and then we'll answer a question from one of our listeners. But when do you say prednisone should be used with a dog that has cancer? I know this is something that was prescribed for our lab, but what is prednisone actually good for, and when should they use it if they decide to use it in a dog that has cancer?
So probably lymphoma is probably the only cancer that I would recommend prednisone. And it's to answer your question, it's used for comfort. So, you know, the prednisone, it's an anti-inflammatory, but it's also strongly immunosuppressive. It suppresses the immune system. So the lymphatics are part of the immune system. It, you know, the lymph nodes, there's, in addition to the lymph nodes, there's lymphatic vessels all over your body. And what they do is drain. So lymph nodes in an area, like say, you know, you have a sinus infection or something, and the lymph nodes around your neck, you know, like get kind of swollen and sore because it's, they're draining that, you know, that area. So because they're part of the immune system, prednisone will shrink the lymph nodes. And what happens in the case of lymphoma? So again, it comes back to comfort. You know, you said you started your dog on CBD and the lymph nodes reduced in size and your dog was comfortable. So that's great. Sometimes the lymph nodes, you know, do get big enough that they're, you know, they press on the airway, makes it hard for the dog to breathe, hard for them to eat and drink. There's, you know, some of the nodes that get enlarged, like in their armpits or on their limbs, you know, make it uncomfortable for them to walk. So if they're painful, then yeah, I would use prednisone. I mean, I still do other things like Chinese herbs, ozone, and other support, which can still help reduce the amount of prednisone that would be necessary to keep the pet comfortable. But it's about comfort. I mean, I look at quality of life. That's what I'm interested in. And if we had to do something like prednisone or something like other pain meds, you know, conventional pain meds or things like that to help keep the pet comfortable, then, because some cancers are pretty painful, then we would definitely do that.
What are the long-term effects of using that drug? And when I say long-term, what do you think is the definition of long-term?
Well, long-term would be, I would say, more than 8 weeks. Because you always have to wean pets off. Once you start them on prednisone, you can't just start them, put them on for 2 weeks, and then stop it. You have to put them on, get your response, and then you have to wean them off. You can't just stop them cold turkey. So they, once they're on it, they're going to have to probably be on it for at least three to four weeks. And so if we went like 8 weeks out and we could, you know, control symptoms, pull them off of it, that would be great. If they go beyond that point where they need to stay on it for comfort, then I would consider that a little bit longer term. And so long term, it has effects on the adrenals. So it suppresses normal adrenal function. It almost makes like the dogs can be, look like a Cushing's dog, basically, because they're getting too much mm-hmm. steroid. So, you know, Cushing's dogs have an overactive adrenal gland. We're putting prednisone as like the artificial form of, you know, that natural cortisol that the adrenals produce. And so they could look a little bit Cushingoid, pot-bellied, thin skin, sometimes hair comes out. They can have effects on the kidneys and liver, but it's, you know, again, it's a balancing act. Are we keeping the pet comfortable? Because everything you give, if once you're on the conventional side and you're doing pharmaceuticals, there isn't a single drug out there that doesn't have side effects. You know, they all do. And prednisone has a really, you know, kind of bad rap. And it's not that it should be used judiciously for sure, but even giving something like an antibiotic can have really serious effects on the body as well. So, you know, we can see effects on the organs, but again, if that's the trade-off for keeping the pet comfortable, and preserving their quality of life, then, I mean, that's a balancing act, But I think that's a worthwhile trade-off.
If your pet has cancer, if you've recently received a cancer diagnosis and you don't know what to do, get a phone consultation from Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K, drjudyholisticvet.com. All right. So Dr. Judy, I have a question from one of our listeners. This one has to do with low fat. So I had an email that asked if I had a low fat blend, okay, a 5% fat. And I said, well, no, I don't. Why would you want a low fat, something that low in fat? Because as you and I have talked about it, dogs need fat for their brain health. They need fat for their energy level. But here's what she said. She has a dog who underwent a benign mass removal, lobectomy, and spleenectomy. And she went in recently for a CBC panel. And the CBC that was run said that her BUN and LIPA were high. So I asked, what were the numbers? The BUN was 28, the LIPA, 1875. But this vet that she saw told her that basically it was due to the raw diet, that mm-hmm. it was too much fat, and that she needed to get a low fat blend. What do you have to say about that?
First of all, the BUN, which is the blood urea nitrogen. So this is a measure of kidney function because the kidneys remove urea from the blood. So when this goes up, it can be an indicator that the kidneys are not functioning properly or are stressed. But the thing to remember is that laboratory normals are based on kibble-fed dogs. And raw-fed dogs will very commonly have a slightly increased BUN. So you have to look at the value. If it's at like a couple of points out of the normal range, I actually consider that normal on a raw fed dog, as long as the phosphorus should still be normal. We should still have a normal phosphorus. And usually the creatinine, which is another measure of kidney function, is also normal. It might be like at the high end of normal, but it's usually normal. So that level doesn't concern me at all. And the thing is, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fat in the diet. You know, this is the kidneys. This is a byproduct of protein metabolism. This is where the whole thing about, you know, which we've talked about, the whole low protein diet thing, but because the urea is a byproduct of protein metabolism, that's where people are, you know, told to be on a low protein diet, but it has nothing to do with the fat content whatsoever. The two are completely, you know, unrelated. So this is a matter of somebody that perhaps needs a little more education on nutrition, which a lot of vets don't have, you know, and I can't criticize them, you know, veterinarians for not knowing because they don't have the education unless they pursue it on their own. The lipase is a pancreatic enzyme, and these will go up and down normally, you know, depending on, you know, so blood work, we've talked about this before. Blood work is always a snapshot. It is a snapshot of that instant when you're drawing the blood. So the pancreas could be secreting more lipase for some reason. When did the dog eat last? If depending on when this blood draw was timed with eating, if it's a, you know, fasted blood draw, then I would expect it to be low, but that if the dog had recently ate something, then it could be high because the pancreas is doing its job. But this has been kind of debunked as a warning sign. It used to be like amylase is another one. Amylase and lipase are two pancreatic enzymes that we, you know, test. And that used to be kind of the hallmark testing for pancreatitis. But then over time, we've seen that these values can go up. And if the dog isn't symptomatic, so dogs with pancreatitis are really, really sick. So if we got a little bit of an elevated lipase or amylase and the dog isn't sick, then it probably isn't even a problem. And there's better tests now for pancreatitis, more specific tests that I think can pinpoint whether we really have an issue with the pancreas or not. The other thing about that level in a raw fed dog is it may be a little higher because the dog is eating more fat. And so again, you need to look at a new normal, because if, you know, dogs are being, if these normals are based on a kibble diet that's mostly carb, that doesn't have much animal fat in it, or if it is, does have animal fat in it, it's denatured and broken down. You're talking completely different type of fat than a raw fed dog. So maybe these new norm, these little slightly elevated values, just like the kidney values, are, you know, especially in some individuals, normal for a dog that's eating a diet, because the pancreas is just doing its job. It's kicking out these enzymes to digest the fat. It doesn't mean that there's a problem. So this is where we need to look at the pet. How is the pet acting? Is the pet sick? You know, is the pet thriving on this food and doing great and has fantastic energy? Then I would say those values are probably definitely not an indication that we need to reduce the fat in the diet.
This does bother me. So I know you said, well, I can't blame the vets. Well, I can, because here's the problem. In this email, she said, well, she's a nutritionist. She's a nutritionist. However, this nutritionist, she said, goes by the AAFCO standard. The dog was fine. They just ran the panel and now they want to, you know, jockey with the food and put this dog on a low fat blend, which I, you know, 10%, I think 10% fat, real animal fat, 8 to 10% is probably the lowest you want to go. Don't you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I frequently recommend going above that. I mean, I think starting, like if you're transitioning to raw, then you don't want to go super high fat right from the get-go, because the body has to adapt to digesting that fat. But I think starting around 10% and then adding a little bit, you know, extra in here and there. That's what I do with my dogs. I give my dogs a little extra, you know, beef tallow or pork lard, or, you know, not every single meal, but, you know, I add that into my dog's diets, because I want to make sure they have plenty of healthy fat. And as long as they're not getting a diarrhea, there's no apparent adverse effects, then I think that extra fat is really, really healthy for them. And, you know, and another thing, you know, to ask, you know, this whole nutritionist thing, because veterinary nutritionists are not educated about raw feeding. So when they say, well, you know, raw feeding is not appropriate, you know, I'd be asking where they got that information. But, you know, what have you learned about raw? Where did you learn it? Show me the evidence. You know, they preach to us medical professionals, evidence-based medicine, yet, you know, so many veterinarians are out there saying that raw is bad and it's making pets sick with absolutely zero definitive evidence to support that. So it's very hypocritical.
And let us just say right off the bat, do not give your dog bacon grease. That is not what we're talking about.
Right.
Right. As good fat. So don't fry up your bacon and then give that grease to your dog. That's just not good fat. We're talking about real animal fat coming from, you know, and people say, well, that's real animal fat. It's coming from a pig. No, not like that. Okay. Don't be doing that. Okay. That's our show for today. Hey, listen, go to my Instagram page. It's Raw Dog Food and Company. I've got weekly tips, but you know what I did this week, Dr. J.C. Or I did today. I, for some reason, had it in my mind today was Friday. So I threw out my Friday tip for Thursday. Yeah, I'm all messed up today.
When you own your own business, all the days kind of run together, right?
I do. So anyway, all right. If you have a question that you want answered here on the podcast, you can email me or go to Dr. Jasek's page. It's drjudyholisticvet.com or cancer-vet.com. You are doing amazing work. We so thank you. Thank you for helping clear up the cancer confusion. There's a lot of cancer confusion. So we so appreciate you doing that. And we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Well, I appreciate having a platform to get out here and get this information out there and have a good morning rant about this stuff.
I know. I say don't get over your madness before you get on the show. No.
Don't defuse it before you get here, because we want people to feel your energy and hear your words. So thanks so much, Dr. Judy.
All right. Thank you, Dee Dee.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.